Welcome to the Coventry and Warwickshire Green Business Programme podcast. Subscribe now for more episodes.
Hello, welcome to the Green Business Programme podcast, which is part funded by the European Regional Development Fund and delivered by Coventry City Council, Coventry University and Coventry University Enterprises. Now, you probably don't need me to tell you Coventry is a city like no other in the UK. After being so successfully rebuilt from the ravages of the Second World War. Today, the city continues to go from strength to strength and is rapidly becoming the heart of technology, logistics and infrastructure in the country. If you've recently passed by the newly built state-of-the-art train station, which opened last month, you might have also noticed a futuristic-shaped building being rapidly constructed by a group of very keen workers. They call it an urban airport, but what does that mean? What purpose will it have? And how will this benefit the community? And importantly, listeners, has Coventry created a world's first? I'm John Bates, and I've invited someone along to join the podcast who knows the answers to many of the questions that you may have and I'm going to pose. So welcome to the podcast, Transport Innovation Manager Sunil. Sunil, tell us who you are and what you do.
Good morning, John. Thank you for the invitation. I'm Sunil Badeo, the Transport Innovation Manager for Coventry City Council, in a very fortunate position to do a lot of development in new ways of travelling and transportation. My history and my background is I've been in the traffic industry and traffic management industry over the past 35 years and have worked with various different authorities, Coventry being the last one that I'm currently employed at. So that's my background, and I'm glad to join this podcast.
Great. Thank you, Sunil. Just explain, if you would, the concept of the urban airport.
The urban airport, it's an infrastructure. The project currently we're working on, John, is to provide the infrastructure for drones to operate safely in an urban environment. So the project allows us, and the project will demonstrate how an operational airport can be built within the urban environment. The drones have been flying for a number of years within the global market. So flying drones isn't an issue, but a drone cannot operate without a space where it can land and take off. So when we talk about an airport, it's a vertiport, what we call a vertiport, where a drone can vertically take off and land. But we need to provide that because legislations doesn't allow for a drone to just fly from point A to point B. So for example, if you wanted to fly from Coventry to Birmingham, you would need a flight path, but you would need an operational platform where you can take off and land. So that's what the project currently is demonstrating, how we can build the infrastructure and the infrastructure paths and highways or airways where we can fly those paths at.
What are the rules and legislation then that have to be conformed to? Is it the same as it is for a traditional airport?
Very much so, because as I said, the synergy I always use is if we wanted to travel from, say, Birmingham to Coventry and you wanted to catch a train, you'd have to go to the train station, and you have a train station at Coventry and you have a train station at Birmingham, and the track that you have to follow is takes you there. The same synergy works here. You have an airport or a vertiport at Coventry and you have a vertiport at Birmingham. And the flight path is determined by, and we have to work in conjunction with a civil aviation authority who determines which flight path we can use. Very similar to the ones that the commercial pilots have to use, where they can fly in a certain direction and in a certain path. It's very much like a highway is being built in skies.
So in the introduction, I asked the question about has Coventry created a world's first? And if we have, why was Coventry chosen?
Yes. Again, this particular development, as I say, the infrastructure development that we're currently working on, it is the world's first, where, you know, no other country in the world has got this urban airport. Now, the reason we got involved in it is Coventry has always been the heartland of development, ranging from the jet engine, Frank Whittle developing that, the bicycles were developed here. We got a huge, huge academia between the two universities, and the development and research and development in transportation we're very good at in Coventry. So as with Coventry University as our partners, this was proposed to us to say that we'd like to do this, and it's been funded by Innovate UK, part of the government, with the Future Flight Programme, because the need to understand how we are going to move around in the future was quite keen. So as you mentioned earlier, we are very innovative, we are very forward thinking as an authority. So we took the challenge on.
How do you think this is really going to benefit the city?
Again, that vision is something that which I'm trying to convince people as to, it has to open up this vision. How is it going to benefit the residents of Coventry? When you think about it in logistics way, you have an urban airport right next to the railway station, and the other infrastructure part would be that you have another urban airport or a vertiport in a housing development of about 250 houses. All of a sudden, what you've done is you've started moving logistics, started moving people from an estate to a point of travel. So they wanted to travel from their estate to their railway station, they can take the drone. So, you know, we were talking about air taxis previously. Those sort of taxis can be taken from your estate, brings you to the airport, and the drone then brings you to the railway station. You take the train, and you go to your destination. But going further to meet our green agendas, you could have all the post offices delivering letters to that particular estate via a drone, and then they can be distributed locally using a more greener method. So when we look at trying to reduce emissions, congestions, these are the sort of transport needs that will help us do that.
I mean, this is really futuristic, isn't it? I mean, it's and I can imagine that, you know, some of our listeners will be sharing the thoughts that I have, which is, you know, this is just extraordinary. And this really is the future. This is tremendous for Coventry.
It is. And it is very futuristic. And we're looking at a program where we want to try and take this to the children in the schools, because they're the ones who will be benefiting from this investment and this development. Because when you look at how it can benefit, how it can help us meet our zero targets, how it can help us reduce congestions on our streets. And when you don't have any bars or any limitations as to where you want to stop, you can extend it to wherever you want to take it to, at the level you want to take it to. Other thing which I did want to get over in this podcast is, if I can, is the myth of having your pizzas delivered to your back garden or your Amazon parcel delivered to your front door. That's not going to happen, because legislation doesn't allow you to do that. So when we look at it the pragmatic way as to how it can help, is the post office have a van and they will go and deliver letters to one street or two streets, and the estates will then have Amazon bringing a van delivering parcels. Here is a solution where you can load that drone up from a distribution center, take it to that estate, and then when it reaches that estate, you have a very much like a old post office letterbox type of thing, where you can either go and pick it up, or you can have people using more greener methods like an electric bike, electric cargo bike, or an autonomous vehicle to deliver it to your home.
So there really is a benefit in terms of the climate and environment. Now, for the public who may well want to know more, what can they come and see? Where can they visit?
Yes, the infrastructure opens on Monday, the 25th, which is primarily for the media to come and have a look at it, and it will go. But it's open to the public from the 28th. If you type in on your Google search engine or any search engine, Urban Airport Coventry, you can go online and book yourself a space. There are a number of slots still available, and people can go and just book themselves a slot they want to, and they can take their families. You can book up to 8 people per visit, and it's open to the public as from the 28th onwards for 3 weeks.
And is that free to visit?
Absolutely free to visit, no cost.
And people will then be able to understand a little bit more about what's going to be happening and where the investment has gone.
Absolutely. And the biggest benefit will be, you'll understand when we're talking about a lot of people, when I first muted this idea, a question was raised to me to say, you know, are you telling me and all that you will have drones flying around Coventry with people's legs dangling outside or from drones, you will see a life-size model of a passenger-carrying drone. And it is an absolute sight. So within this 3 weeks, we will have that on display. It's a model because legislation doesn't allow us to fly passenger carrying drones at the moment, but you will see a life-size model in there. Coventry University have done some great work in showing the augmented reality of how the airport would look inside and how the flights would operate. So when you visit, there are so many other things in there. So it's also got a good beverages company sitting there and how the internal operates. And it's very, very much like an airport. So you have a departures lounge, you have an arrivals lounge, you have a cargo bay. It's definitely worth a visit.
It sounds like a great day out. And while I've got you, tell us about any other projects that the transport team are working on that we can look forward to.
There's a number of projects that we're working on, innovative projects. As you probably are aware that Coventry is the largest city with the a number of infrastructure for EV charge points outside London, where we are introducing so many EV charge points across Coventry. Huge, huge level of success in there. We are developing the very light rail in Coventry, which when you're looking at deploying a metro, we're talking £100 million for laying the tracks and things like that. With a very light rail development, we're looking at a new way of designing a track, which is more cost effective and more, the costs are a lot less than the traditional trams that you have to put in, because the track and the vehicle is designed as a very light object, which can then be deployed very quickly at a very cost effective way. With the other projects we're working on, because we have a huge amount of car motor manufacturers in the West Midlands region. So we're looking at developing, and which we have already been successful in one of the other projects we did, was autonomous vehicles. And we're still progressing with driverless cars. We've had cars driving around on the ring road autonomously as part of the project. And we've got a test bed where we're encouraging people, all the motor manufacturers, to come and use and test their developments in Coventry. And the list goes on, John.
Well, and perhaps on another day, you'll agree to come back on the podcast and tell us more. But your work sounds extraordinary and very exciting. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. That was Sunil Badeo, who is the Transport Innovation Manager at Coventry City Council. So moving on to the second part of this episode, I was wondering if you might have spotted around the city of Coventry vans and cars with the inscription "Electric Fleet First." The reason that I ask is Coventry City Council is also behind the Electric Fleet First project. Funded by Highways England, this project provides electric vehicles for local organisations to trial. The two-year project supports efforts to reduce emissions on the local and strategic road network around Coventry by encouraging businesses to switch to electric vans, pool cars and taxis. Local organisations, SMEs and businesses can trial electric vehicles for a minimum of 2 months before they decide to switch over. So we're going to talk to a local business now who is currently taking part in the programme. Let's just see what they think about what's going on and what difference it's making to them. So Tommy Sandu is the company director of Smart Learning Driving School, which is an independent driving school covering Coventry and the surrounding areas. Hi, Tommy. Thanks for sparing the time.
Hi.
Just tell us a little bit about your involvement in the project and how you found out about it and why you decided to take part.
Yes, sure. So obviously we're a local driving school, but we are quite large in our sense that we have 50 driving instructors and we teach probably about 2,000 people per week on a regular basis. We first heard about the electric vehicle trials through the Green Deal project, and we thought it was really important that we tried to get involved because we're probably teaching the next generation of drivers. And we also get a lot of kind of questions about how do electric cars work. And because we've never had an electric car, it's always an interesting concept to say, well, we need to try one first. So the Electric Fleet project was a great way for us to have a car, test the model out, get new learners into the cars that can also then go back home and tell their parents or their siblings that drive of the experience they've had in electric car, including the charging points, the washing of the car, and various other elements that come with the owning an electric car.
All makes perfect sense. But in that respect, I suppose you're a bit of a trailblazer. How are the trials going?
Absolutely fantastic. Obviously, like everyone else, when we first got the car, we had the old, are we going to run out of electric? How do these cars work? What's the cost element and everything else? So we've had the car probably longer than the average person to test that model out. And it's interesting because obviously we use the vehicles and probably do an over 100 miles a day. And the car can sustain that if you drive it correctly, manage the way you're working and everything else. An average person that's just going to the shops and back, maybe going to work and back, ain't going to do more than, say, 200 miles in a whole week. But we'll probably do 500-600 miles per week, which is a large amount of, you know, kind of mileage compared to the average person.
So it's a case really of adapting a little bit and sort of managing how you use the vehicle. Is that how you overcome the charging issue?
Yeah, the Corsas are a fantastic piece of kit. You know, they do a range of about 85 to 100 miles on one full charge. And then that's obviously more than enough for most people. But then there's strategic charging points within the Coventry area as well and outside the Coventry area. So if you plan it well, yes, you can probably do enough mileage for an average person on one charge for probably 3 to 4 days.
Right. OK, so are there any other issues that you need to overcome?
Sometimes, obviously, the charging units may not work. So, you know, a bit of forward planning of thinking I've got enough charge to get kind of through the day, or, you know, I know I'm going to have enough time to charge it at a different point if it's not working. They can break down. And obviously, sometimes they're you can't just take to a normal mechanic. You would have to take to a dealership. But they're your everyday running problems that you have with every car. Sometimes, as we know, that recently we've had fuel problems where people can't get fuel and they'd have to relocate to another station. So as a general rule of thumb, they're no different to any other car that you're probably going to own or run.
Now, you mentioned fuel, and that clearly is front and centre of motorists' minds at the moment because of how fast fuel prices have risen. Is using electric, is that helping you financially?
Absolutely. There's a vast difference in the cost of charging the vehicle compared to fuel costs. Obviously, you are going to have an upfront cost, a larger cost of purchasing an electric car compared to, say, for example, a petrol car. But then it balances itself out over several years. There's less maintenance on an electric car because you haven't got to service it because there's no oil or, you know, anything else, mechanical parts to use. You can charge it from home as well. So obviously, you're not running around trying to find fuel or where there's a shortage. You can just charge it from home and off you go. So there are advantages of that. And obviously, there are savings to be had as well on an electric car compared to petrol at the moment.
So how long have you been involved with the trial? How many weeks is this? Have you got under your belt?
We're the fortunate ones. We've nearly had about 8 months on this project. So we've had quite a long time. So we've nearly done 20,000 miles in these vehicles to really see how the project works. And we really wanted to test the model out, get people driving the vehicle as well. So we've had quite a few people that have learned from scratch through to test and passing a test in these cars who have now considered the longevity of buying an electric car, or a minimum, a hybrid vehicle compared to just a petrol diesel vehicle. So, you know, it's showing that over a longer period of time that it's beneficial to teach people in electric cars as well.
So that's probably quite an interesting point from the driver experience point of view, particularly when you're teaching students to drive. Is the driver experience noticeably different?
The actual mechanics of the vehicle are exactly the same to an automatic vehicle. So if you were driving a diesel, petrol or electric automatic car, they're virtually similar. The difference is the electric cars are a lot more powerful in the sense that because they don't have to draw the fuel into the engine and change the mechanics of it, it powers up a lot quicker than a mechanical vehicle, and it's a lot smoother. But it's the myths that we kind of break, because when somebody has a lesson in an electric car and then they go home to their parents or grandparents or siblings, there's kind of, oh, they run out of charge, they will. Or in fact, people come back and say, you can't wash them cars because they're electric. So it's a great way to myth you know, break myths, get them to understand how to use that vehicle. And once they use the electric vehicle and other people see that kind of how good they are, it kind of shows people that, well, maybe I should be changing as well to electric vehicle.
So, Tommy, the last question is probably the million-dollar question then. So is your fleet going to go electric?
Absolutely. It's the future and we can't change the future. We have to kind of adopt the future. Electric vehicles, our driving instructors have used the vehicle, you know, so several of my driving instructors or at least half of our people have used the electric vehicle. And we know over the next 3 to 5 years, we will be 80% electric because that is the future. It is the way to go forward. So that's the way we're already committed to buy a vehicle from Corsa. The same as one we've got. So yes, definitely we'll be changing over as time goes on.
Tommy, great to talk to you. Thank you for sparing the time to come on the podcast. That was Tommy Sandhu, who is the company director of Smart Learner Driving School. Thank you for listening. But before we go, I want to tell you about an event which is coming up. And particularly, if you want to learn more about the Electric Fleet First project, this webinar is something that you should join. So on the 4th of May, we will be discussing renewable energy, green transport and funding opportunities. Join us and learn more about how our program could help you identify ways to save energy and reduce your CO2 emissions. Please note that the program does not offer grants towards electric vehicles. However, we could help you with grants of up to £50,000 if you are planning to make changes to your business, such as replacing old machinery, installing solar panels, or making changes to your lighting or to your heating system. So the webinar is really worth joining. And for more information about that, please have a look in the show notes where there are links that you can just click through. We hope you enjoyed this episode, which was produced by Maria Kovlia. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.